Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. We're live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up at 7:30. Magical night for Steven Stamkos. Last night he scores four goals. We'll get into that with Alex a little bit later in the show. TD with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit, talking all things Tennessee Titans. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Tim to the program. Tim, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey guys, enjoy the show. This deal with Notre Dame getting this memorandum of understanding, I've got a solution for the whole thing. We just pick out 12 teams, Alabama, you know, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and we give them all the same thing. And if they're on the top 12, then that's what we did. We don't need no committee or anything then. And then if they're not, then we just take, if it's eight of them, we just do them eight, and that's all we do. You know, we just cut everybody else out. That's what Notre Dame's wanting.
Well, there is something to that. I mean, look, this goes – thank you for the call, Tim. This goes back to the, you know, the automatic bids conversation too of, like, this year is a perfect example of why the Big Ten is pushing for the automatic bids. Because they don't have teams that are worthy of the playoff this year. They got Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon, and that's it. And that's why they want these automatic bids, because they want as many as possible. And I think it's a – this year is also a good reminder of why I think the SEC made the right decision to say, yeah, screw you.
Exactly.
We can get a lot of teams in the playoffs.
Right. They have a lot better – they have a lot more quality programs. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, obviously the Big Ten thought that Penn State was going to be great this year, right?
Yeah,
and maybe higher hopes for USC, higher hopes for, I don't know, I guess Nebraska maybe.
Rutgers.
Good thing. Yeah, there you go. Good thing for the Big Ten that Indiana has become a superpower, right? My goodness, yeah. What if that hadn't happened?
I mean, I know.
Michigan's not good anymore. They had their quick uprising, and now they're – I have no idea what the heck's going to happen with them here.
No.
I mean, I know Wolverines fans think they're going to get Kalen DeBoer. We'll see. But yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And again, go beyond that. Like the ACC this year, there's like one team that we'd want to see playing this sucker. So yeah. I don't even want them to get two autos. You know, no, they don't. They got one team that we want to see, and luckily it worked out that they got in. But the whole auto bids thing is just absolutely asinine. But yeah, look, The Notre Dame part of this is going to be very interesting moving forward. The thing to remember is, though, even with that special treatment that they're getting, that it's in the deal that if in the top 12 they have to be in. Yeah, this year teams 10 through like 15 were obviously
pretty close.
All like Vanderbilt was one of many teams that feels rightfully wronged, and Notre Dame could easily be 13th in a, you know,
yep,
in a situation too. So don't forget that. This is why, again, as much as people complain about them, and I get it, you still have to have a committee. I'm sorry, you got to have a committee. Go committee, team committee.
So, Joe, some comments making the rounds yesterday as it relates to the Titans and their head coaching vacancy. You know, Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated has put together this big, long list of going through potential head coaching candidates and what that could look like. And basically, he does this every year, the top head coaching candidates that he feels like teams are going to consider in 2026. So, I mean, there's a lot of people on this thing. It's a long, extensive list. But Mike McCarthy is on here, obviously. And this is what Connor Orr put in his piece at SI.com. I'll just read it to you. Quote, McCarthy is viewed by some as an early front runner for the Titans vacancy, given his experience at the quarterback position and the Titans needing to maximize Cam Ward. Though there are some conflicting opinions emerging that Tennessee may value a younger voice in the building. That's all he said. So, Joe, I saw a bunch of headlines yesterday around the league of like, McCarthy is the front runner for the Titans job. And so I'm like, okay, let me go back and read this again. Okay, this is all he says. McCarthy is viewed by some as an early front runner for the Titans vacancy. What does that mean? Who are the some?
Yeah, that's a great case of people taking something and running with it that they shouldn't. Connor Orr writes some good stuff for sure. I would not, based on just his job title, well, his job duties. I don't think he's like a Breer who's or a Charles who's like constantly talking to GMs and coaches and stuff. And again, and I'm not like diminishing him. I just don't think that's really his job. So, and the way he wrote that was not like he's reporting something. Again, if you're viewing some, viewed by other, that just means maybe some other GM was like, I bet you they're going to hire McCarthy. As opposed to if you had information from inside the Titans organization that told you that, you would not have written it that way. And so anybody who, so tell me what sites are
Well,
saying
it's some
frontrunner?
of it's these aggregating, these aggregation sites that just run around and take headlines and put them everywhere. But it's all over social media too, of like, oh, Mike McCarthy is the favorite for the Titans job. And it's like, I mean, can we read? All he's viewed by some. Let's chill on the McCarthy front.
This is how we're all going to get nuked into oblivion. I know that this is just sports and like a coaching hire, but like this is how we're all going to die. Because yeah, that's not what he's saying. Some people view this, and again, the McCarthy discussion has been there from the start, right? The obvious connection to Brinker and all that stuff. And then it's, what was the second part he said
Well,
again?
there are conflicting opinions emerging that Tennessee may value a younger voice in the building.
So again, that also the way it's written is not him getting something from the Titans. Like when when like Graziano and
Fowler.
when they do their thing, obviously we have Diana at the Athletic and other, sometimes if Sando too, and like sometimes you can tell it's like there's some stuff coming from inside buildings and stuff. And again, a lot of times it's still kind of vague because they're not going to just come out and tell you what they're going to do. But you get some indications. This to me it feels very secondhand, which is like not just a grain of salt, but just really just keep it at arm's length.
Well, look, McCarthy may end up getting the job. I have no idea. One thing we've talked about with him is, I mean, he doesn't have a job at the moment, so the Titans could talk to him at any point. They may have been talking to Mike McCarthy for the last 2 months, for all I know. I have no idea. But I saw some people running with this yesterday as if this is like, oh, well, we got to talk about it. Like, Mike McCarthy's the favorite for the Titans job. I'm like, this is an absolute nothing burger to me. Absolutely nothing means is coming from this from me.
It's also the problem of just having this linger for so long, it's just like everybody's looking for a little nugget of information or anything to advance the story, and it's just not. I mean, to me, there's probably not going to be anything concrete or much concrete till we get to the end of the season, and then you get into which of these potential targets, like is Robert Saleh, like are the Niners in the playoffs or not? Right. And you have all that stuff too. I mean, this is a problem with, everybody was asking for Brian Callahan to be fired, but now you've had to sit there for months with no information and just scrounge for anything to give you an indication what the Titans are going to do. They've done their due diligence on every single coach in North America, at every level of football, and we have no idea what they're going to do.
No, and but that is the thing, like we're getting closer to finding out, like we're this time of month from now we're going to be getting in there and seeing what this looks like. So look, we've had a lot of differing opinions on McCarthy. Like every time we bring up McCarthy, the text line, there's some people that are like, yeah, like why would you not hire Mike McCarthy? He's won everywhere he's been. He's won a Super Bowl. Like he did a pretty decent job in Dallas, other than the playoffs, which has been not just the McCarthy thing in Dallas. It's been a Dallas Cowboys thing for the last 3 decades. But every time we bring him up, there's also people that are like, I think Kuharski used the phrase dinosaur, right? Like it feels like it's kind of a dinosaur and maybe a younger person and coming in, whether it's a new coordinator or not, but somebody that has either been a head coach before or that is a little bit younger, maybe the way to go. It's been relatively polarizing on the McCarthy front.
Yeah, but even like the younger comment, yes, if it's okay, so if it's relative to McCarthy, then that's a big group. But the way Connor Orr wrote it, you could take that as, oh, more like a Joe Brady, more
Yeah,
like a Clint
exactly.
Kubiak. But I don't know. Like younger than McCarthy, pretty easy to achieve, right? Unless you want to, you know, the Titans want to go try to, you know, steal Pete Carroll away from Tom Brady. So are they? It is interesting that Karski used that terminology. Maybe he's got an inkling.
Well, I don't know.
Going to somebody younger.
Well, there's, you know, a text. This is kind of the point. Like the texter here says, I don't like even the conversation, but theoretically, what are the positives that McCarthy could add to the Titans? Because all I see are negatives. Washed up, washed out. He might be in a good position coach, but not a head coach.
I disagree with that a little bit.
No, like he clearly, again, reading between the lines on what Borgonzi has said, they're clearly looking for somebody who they feel like has pretty good leadership skills. He does. Like, the one thing I'll say about McCarthy is the players, generally speaking, love him. So how important is that? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's also done a lot of winning over the years, so yeah. It's easier to love your coach when you're doing a lot of winning out there. But they clearly do. You know, I think he's a good head coach. Now, in 2025, with where the Titans are right now, is he the right head coach? To me, that's a different question.
Yeah, I wouldn't disqualify him. I think he's a good coach. I think it does matter that he just seems to have a good rapport with players. I think he's good. Like, you obviously would love to get someone on the rise who you can grow with, who can become a great coach. Look, going to get Vrabel when he had 1 year as a DC and it was like they were 30th in the league in defense, that was a little bit going on a limb, even though a lot of people had identified Vrabel as one of those, this guy's going to be a head coach. You know, you'd love to do that. But, I mean, I don't think it's just like settling for some washed-up guy. As long as he is all in on doing it, right?
Right.
Yeah, you don't want – I mean, it does look a little bit – and it's probably being unfair to Pete Carroll because he's a great coach. But I do look at the Raiders and it's like, God, is Pete just kind of like, yeah, I'll just keep working, sure. You know? Or, like, are you all in on it? And, again, maybe that's unfair to him. I mean, he's got some weird ownership and front office things going on, that's for sure. But I don't know. I think McCarthy's good. Texter says, you know, just hold off for Mike Tomlin and then go scoop him up. I'm just telling you. I don't know if it's going to happen, but if it does happen, I really, really doubt the Titans are going to be even close to the front of the line on that.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We will continue the conversation on the head coaching front for the Tennessee Titans. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean with us at 7:30. We'll get into all things Predators with him. If you're looking for a good spot to watch NFL games this Sunday, come by Twin Peaks in Madison, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 102.5 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the 49ers. Pregame show brought to you by Tennessee Brew Works and Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Today, between noon and 3, Chase and Big Joe will have your chance to win a $100 Moments Piece Salon and Day Spa gift card and qualify to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card as well. It's the 12 days of Christmas on 102.5 The Game. We'll have the Rex Rant coming up later this hour at 7:45. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will be with us at 7:30. We will get into an epic performance from Steven Stamkos last night with the Nashville Predators. Taking your thoughts on the Titans and the head coaching search. I mentioned McCarthy, pretty controversial. We got in the span of like 3 texts. McCarthy would be a great hire. Mike says, I do not want another head coach that calls offensive plays. Another says, we've had plenty of Mikes come through Tennessee that had great rapport with players, yet the ownership still makes their decision. Another says, don't hire that bum. Keep him anywhere but here. I'm like, okay. A lot of people have strong opinions on Mike McCarthy, apparently.
Wow. Yeah, I don't get it. I get not being over the moon with the idea or thrilled at the idea of that hire. But again, if he wants to do it, you know, it's not like in Dallas he had the greatest team on earth, right? Did a lot of winning. Like you've said before, you know, the postseason stuff. I mean, you know, your Packers go in there and just absolutely destroy a Dallas team everybody thought was going to make a run. I mean, I get all that, but pretty consistently successful head coach. And yeah, Mike saying, I just don't want another head coach who calls plays. I don't think you want to limit yourself. Again, you look around the league at the best teams and tell me how many of them have head coaches who call plays. Quite a few of them. Doesn't mean it always works, but like, I don't think Brian Callahan – I don't think that was the problem with Brian Callahan. I mean, he did the whole, oh, I guess I'll give up play calling and I'll just be the regular head coach. It didn't get any better. Like, it just
totally his decision, too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So if you have a good coach who's good at that, who can still do enough of the other stuff, and again, I think in a lot of cases it is, you basically have a head coach of the defense. So you got to, just like a Sala would need a good OC or a Flores would need a good OC, you know, a play calling head coach needs a good head coach of the defense. And you kind of just say, that's your baby. That can work really well. I mean, it's worked very well in a lot of places. I mean, the Rams might win it all this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's worked well all over the league. Now, the Titans have a very recent situation where it did not work well, right, of hiring the offensive guy, and it just didn't work. Now, I said it at the time. To me, that doesn't mean that you have to limit yourself from going that route again. Like, if the Titans get through this whole thing and they think that Clint Kubiak is the guy for the job, then go hire him. I don't care that Clint Kubiak hasn't been a head coach before. If you think he's the right guy for the job – and it's going to translate into a good head coach, then go do it. I just don't think this is what happens. When the last guy you hired, when that style doesn't work, you go most times completely the opposite way. And it kind of feels like everybody expects them to make like a Vrabel-type hire right now, which they may do, and it may end up being the right, you know, style of hire. But I'm not closing the door on Clint Kubiak or Joe Brady or whoever. If they think that's the best candidate, go get him.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I hope it seems like they're casting a wide net in terms of they're not disqualifying anybody off the jump for like being this type of coach or that type of coach, which is good. That's the way you need to do it. Liam McLeod says it just sucks we have to aspire to mediocrity. Well, mediocrity would be the next step, but again, Mike, if you're talking about Mike McCarthy, he has won a Super Bowl. You can give all the credit to Aaron Rodgers if you want. But it did happen, and that is the idea, right, is to be able to win a Super Bowl. I mean, that's what everybody's goal is in this league. You're not hiring a coach to say, I think this coach could get us consistently to be 8-9, 9-8. I understand. Make your Jeff Fisher jokes right now. Go ahead. Mike McCarthy, had he been coaching the Titans the last – couple of years would probably be a sub-mediocre coach in that time period, just like Mike Vrabel was 6-18 in his last 24 with the Titans. That's well below mediocre. So these coaches are very important. Also, the Jimmys and Joes, the X's and O's, you know the old saying.
Well, and look, again, I understand that he had Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback for a long time. He also was, you know, I think you have to give him some credit for the development of Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah.
And look, I understand at this point that's a long time ago. Like, you're talking about 20 years ago. So I get that. But, I mean, he's worked with Aaron Rodgers. He's worked with Dak Prescott. And those two players are not the same. But I do think Mike McCarthy knows what he's doing at the quarterback position, right? And there's demonstrated success that he's had – working with quarterbacks. And, you know, I understand that people are going to immediately bring up Brian Callahan. It's like, well, you know, Brian Callahan was in the same meeting room a few times with Peyton Manning. And that's how he ends up getting in Matthew Stafford and Joe Burrow and all these guys. Like, to me, it's not the same. Like, Mike McCarthy as a head coach has worked with these quarterbacks. And I do place value in that.
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think Dak got better too. There on his watch too. I think he obviously has a feel for that. And I mean, you know, he's, like you said, it was 20 years ago that Rodgers, he was the 05 draft, right? I think he was 05 draft.
That is correct.
So it's several years after that. And then obviously you get to the 10-11, I think was the Super Bowl year, or 11-12 maybe. Yeah. But so, yeah. Okay. So that's 15 years ago. How much has, obviously, schemes have changed, of course. A lot of things about the game have changed. We just talked about the analytics and its influence on the game and how operationally, you know, way more going for it. A lot of stuff has changed in the game. The mechanics and the bottom line stuff of being a quarterback, has it really changed that much?
No.
In the last 20 years, I don't think so.
Well, and there, by the way, a lot of people making the argument. I've heard Tom Brady talk about this, which I know Joe will not like. But I've seen people talking about it this week. Like, is the quarterback position really progressing. Like, yeah, people are more physically gifted. People are more physically talented. And a lot of quarterbacks coming in that make big-time throws. You know, but one of the things I've seen this week, Joe, like, what does it say about today's quarterbacking in the NFL that the Colts looked around and said, you know what, this 44-year-old guy that hadn't played football in 5 years, that's our best option to win games right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that, and that's a fair point. I mean, I don't know, though, that, like, again, you look at their situation with injuries to three quarterbacks. I don't know that we're ever going to be in a situation where we have more than, like, 20-ish quarterbacks who anybody thinks are good at a certain time. Will we? 20 to 25? You know, a few teams feel good about their backup. Like, is that really – I mean, I think it's an interesting point because certainly people give up on quarterbacks so quickly now, yeah. Right? It's just like it's the churn is way more than it used to be. But at the same time, what do you expect, I guess, if you're in the situation they're in with all the bad luck they've had at that position? I mean, like, what, apparently they asked for Sam Ehlinger to come, or they were looking into that. I mean, I just don't, have we ever had a time where it's just, this league is just stocked with all these awesome QB2s? I mean,
no, I think a big part of what, you know, that what they're talking about in that is, like, there's no, like, Phillip Rivers has seen every defense imaginable, right? Like, there's nothing as good as Seattle's defense is on Sunday, and they're probably going to dominate that game. There's nothing that Seattle's going to throw at Phillip Rivers that is like, oh, I've never seen that before, right? And I think, you know, with RPOs and everything that's in college football and on some of these systems right now, I think there is a worry moving forward that these quarterbacks, just from a schematic standpoint and from things they've been exposed to, are just not as – number one, maybe not as prepared is not the right way to put it. There's not enough patience anymore for them to be able to get to the point where they can recognize all those things.
Yeah, it's and look, at Heupel's offense is an example too. You know, a lot of college coaches want to make it as simple as possible for their quarterbacks, right. And which I get. You want to win,
exactly.
But then yeah, some of the stuff you have to do with the NFL, you haven't done any of it.
615-737-1025. Is our phone number. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will be with us coming up next. Big night for Steven Stamkos last night. We will get into that with Alex coming up next. The Rex ran at 7:45. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Big night for a legend of the game, Steven Stamkos. 4 goals last night for the Nashville Predators, tying a team record, tying a career high. And to help us talk more about that and the local professional hockey team, we welcome in our friend Alex Doherty to the program on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Alex covers the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean. Alex, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just glad that I could be there in person to see last night's performance from Steven Stamkos.
Absolutely. I mean, it's it was really something to behold last night.
I'm obviously, Robbie knows I'm joking, because I unfortunately last night was the only game of the year that I was not able to see in person because I had a sick child to tend to. But it was certainly fun to watch. I'm just the one game that Steven Stamkos has as a you know, almost a career night. I was not there to see it in person.
Maybe you're the bad luck charm.
Well, I have gotten word that he needs to be banned from the building. So
yeah, the process is already in the works that I'm no longer allowed in the building.
Zoom pressers for Alex.
That's it. That's all you get. So, I mean, let's just start there, Alex. I mean, obviously, I mean, you're talking about a big time performance last night. They win 7-2. He scores 4 goals, ties a team record. It is hilarious to think about the team record being, okay, Philip Forsberg, Steven Stamkos have scored 4 goals in a game. That adds up. Then you have Rocco Grimaldi and Eric Nystrom. Those are the two other guys who have done it for the Nashville Predators. Some of those things are not like the other. But, you know, he's closing in on 600 goals. They've won 6 out of their last 8 games. I said last night, you know, the vibes feel high right now for the Nashville Predators. What do you think a game like that means for Stamkos, who's closing in on 600, whose tenure so far with the Predators has not gone to plan, obviously. How big a deal is last night's performance for him?
Well, it's really been building, honestly. Like, I don't think anyone saw four goals in a game coming, but he has been, the last, probably 10 days, over a week, and definitely about six, seven, eight games or so, his game has just been getting better and better. And, it really coincides with the line change, putting Stamkos with O'Reilly and Evangelista. And if you look at the numbers for that combination, Stamkos, O'Reilly, Evangelista, of course, most of the season it was Forsberg with O'Reilly and Evangelista. Forsberg now on the second line, and he had a pretty fantastic goal last night too, by the way. The numbers also line up. It's not like Stamkos is just getting bounces now. Like, the process underneath what's going on, the results they're getting are also fantastic. With those three on the ice this season, they've generated 24 high-danger chances at even strength, and they've only allowed five. So they're just, spending all the time in the opposing zone. They are just kind of dominating the puck. They're dangerous. They're making plays everywhere. Of course, O'Reilly is just nothing's really changed about his game. I mean, he's just doing what he always does. But it's creating more space for Steven Stamkos. And when I talked to him a little while ago, I put a story about this. He mentioned that a big part of his career, he's been finding the quiet ice. That's kind of how he phrased it, which I thought was very interesting. And I think that is what he's needed since he got to Nashville. Is he just needs someone to – he needs to sit in an area where the defenders are not and be able to have someone give him the puck so he could use his shot. And finally, that's happening. And O'Reilly and Evangelista are the ones that are making it happen. And then, it's not just that. The rest of the team is playing well too, but that line has been driving all this success right now.
So I know this is very easy Monday morning quarterbacking, which I love to do. I specialize in it, but it's like, why would you? In my mind, it's like, why would you ever have Stamkos away from O'Reilly? So that's one thing. And then also, I do want to ask you, Alex, how much of this specifically are you crediting with Evangelista taking a step here?
Well, that's actually great. I'll start with the second one first, because Evangelista, if you look at the numbers, actually, there's an argument that he is driving most of it. It's hard whenever you get into the intricacies of a three-person line. It's hard to say this one guy's doing all of it, because it's a combination. It's like the Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson, Phil Forsberg line from a long time ago. They all just contributed, right? But there really is an argument that Evangelista is doing a lot of this. If you look at the numbers with those two away from Luke Evangelista, they drop. His numbers are really carrying a lot of it, and I think it's just a matter of he's able to do. He's grown his game. He's been working on skating. He's a little better in that area. I think he's still not the speed guy that you want, but. With the puck, he's smart with the puck, and he knows exactly where players are going to be. He knows how to keep the play going. You saw that on the play he made to Ryan O'Reilly. That shift was just Evangelista to a T. Like he was finding the puck along the wall. He was holding it long enough to get someone open, and then finding them the puck exactly where they needed to be. So that's the first thing. And on the first question about why would you not put Stamkos with him? I think it just was, they really need, this kind of happened last year where they really wanted to try to have two lines, and then they didn't really have any lines at all. So I think it was a matter of they just needed to get some success with it, because I know that Stamkos has tried, they've tried a lot with Stamkos, right? They've tried him with Svechkov, they tried him with Holla, they've tried him now with O'Reilly. Now that they found it, I mean, there's no way they're going to change it until it just stops working entirely. It may actually hurt Forsberg a little bit, because his numbers have dipped a little bit since not being on that line. But, you don't change it now. Forsberg's going to find his way. He's good enough talent to be able to create goals on his own no matter what line he's on. I think we should strap in for a long stretch of watching this line, work its magic.
All right, so here's the question that I know you have no way of answering, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How sustainable is all this? Because they've won 6 of 8. You look at the standings, and they're only 5 points out of a playoff spot. Now, they're also only 3 points from the bottom of the Western Conference. So everything's kind of jumbled up right now if you're not at the top with Colorado and Dallas and all those guys. But, I mean, look, they are playing better. They are finding results. The offense is coming. Like, they look at the moment like the team that maybe they hoped that they could be this year. So how sustainable do you think this is based on what you've seen over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think the biggest question is how long are they going to keep this 11 forward 7D combination going? Because they've done it twice, two games in a row now. It's worked. But that kind of lineup where you take a forward off and you add a D can really tire out your top forwards, right? So because you double shift Forsberg, you double shift Stamkos. It in the short run, it works. And sometimes you see teams do it in the playoffs because they know they're going to play three lines anyways. But, you know, they got 50 games to go or whatever it is. You can't do 11 forward 7D for 50 games. Someone's going to get hurt. They're going to get exhausted and production's going to dip. So, I think it's sustainable in the sense that I think they found stuff that works and also they found stuff that other teams now have to prepare for, because that was not the case early in the season. Teams did not worry about anything with the Nashville Predators. They knew they could come in and just beat up a slow team. Now they have to prepare for something that is dangerous, and they can't just, you know, roll whoever they want out there. They got to actually think about, oh, how are we going to prepare for that line? It'll be really interesting to see what happens over the late December, early January. They go on a 7-game road trip. So they go to Minnesota, they go to Utah, Vegas, Seattle, Edmonton in there. That is, to me, is like, if they can keep it going through that road trip, that's like the next 12 games or so. Then you've got something. Then you've probably built yourself closer to like a wild card spot, and you've probably got a chance to actually, you know, not be irrelevant down the stretch. But that's a long way away. I mean, look, they've won 6 of 8 games, and they're still in 8th place in the Central. I mean, they beat the pants off the Blues last night, and they're still behind the Blues in the standings. So it's like you've got a long way to go. But if they get through that long road trip through the beginning of January, then you've got something.
Okay, well, let's game that out and say that happens, Alex. And I hate to be a negative Nelly here, but I think there's some Preds fans who would say, please don't hang around the fringes of the playoff race and then just, okay, here we go. No, we're not giving anybody up. How much can this affect how Barry Trotz has been looking at this? Because, I mean, based on his comments, I mean, I think clearly he's been looking at it realistically lately. How much could this change that?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, O'Reilly. You know, they are sitting on a very valuable trade piece with Ryan O'Reilly. They could get a lot for him. If this affects whether or not they trade Ryan O'Reilly, which it probably would, because of we just talked about how great that line is. Then yeah, that's another moment where you look at the Barry Trotz resume and think, is he not seeing the forest for the trees? Is he getting blinded by immediate results and not thinking about the future? I mean, not at all dissimilar to the Soros Askarov, you know, fork in the road where he took Soros. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. It's not that bad because you're not signing Ryan O'Reilly to a long-term contract. But, you know, could you miss out on a top pick and a top player? The other pieces, you know, what are you really going to miss out on? Like, oh, well, you didn't flip Michael Bunting for a third-round pick, or you didn't deal Eric Halla for a fourth-round pick. You know, those things I'm less worried about. I mean, I don't think you're going to walk away with too much regret on that. But the O'Reilly one, yeah. I mean, that you could seriously damage the future by holding on to O'Reilly this year. Of course, you could always deal him next year in his contract year, but this is just the way sometimes it happens, and you're not gonna get Barry Trotz to trade away key pieces if his team's winning. It's just we know that about him now. He's not gonna do that.
Yeah, I mean, still a lot of work to get to that point, but good to see them playing some better hockey, and fun night last night for Steven Stamkos. Alex, awesome stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
Yeah, I'm really, really glad that you got to enjoy that, Robbie. I'm really glad that I wasn't there. I wasn't there to see it.
You think they put like a projector up outside the arena, not let you in, but you could at least be like on the plaza and watch?
I could just watch it from out there. Yeah, keep out. There's gonna be signs. Don't let this man in the building.
Did you at least nurse your child back to health? She good?
Oh, yeah, she's fine. Okay, she's totally fine. She was fine probably by the second period, and I was like, oh come on, this is crazy.
Oh, to be young and have the immune system. Good stuff.
Yes,
good
exactly.
Stuff. Thank all you, right. Alex. Appreciate you, bud. Alex Doherty from the Tennessee and our guest here on the program. We'll have the Rex Rant coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
You like that? You like that?
Oh yeah, we've got 20 more beers, I'll drink 22.
You can't stay away from shellfish, meat, and meat.
Maybe someday you could be like me and get gout.
Well, you're going to ask the question or not?
I hate you all, okay?
I told Joe Burrow that if I didn't get him to come to LSU, I was going to lose my job.
So I'm the jerk.
Paul, the dyslexic jerk.
We should go in the back door. Now we're going in the front door.
Oh, my God. My ass is burning.
I equally hate you all, okay? I want you to know.
It is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Allison Stanley with some commentary in the background. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours.
Hi, Allison. I've heard that I'm her favorite co-host of Robbie and Rexroad.
There's no doubt.
Yep. Get a little bit of a grab bag here. I'm going to get to the Vegas props that absolutely floored me yesterday. And these are real things, but I will, give a little, I just sent you guys this, I need to get this off my chest. I sent you guys a screenshot of a Michigan State fan saying very, very nasty things about me and other people.
Very nasty.
So here, I'll give you the quick story here. So, obviously, all this stuff goes down with Sherrone Moore in Michigan the other night. And basically, if you – my entire career basically up there, it's this whole thing of like the, you know, every – the media favors Michigan. The media is out to get Michigan State. There's a section of the fan base that – I'm trying to think of like – it might be similar like in Alabama with like Auburn fans and Alabama, right? Like sort of – it's the same. That's a very – I think that's a similar dynamic, that rivalry. So the Detroit News that night – all that news is breaking. It's the biggest story in sports. And that night, the Detroit News publishes a story at 11 p.m. about how, like, basically some experts questioning Michigan State's hire of Pat Fitzgerald because of the hazing scandal and everything, right? So the Michigan State fans are like, oh my, like, basically, like, the Detroit News decided to, let's do this story real fast and then put this out there and then people can stop looking at Michigan and their scandal. Now, the reality of it is that was a story. It's a very extensive story. It took like a week to do. They had it scheduled. It was going to run. No one knew the Michigan crap was going to happen. This is the real world explanation. This is sane people understanding what happens in the world. I will agree that someone at the Detroit News needed to say, hey, guys, let's go ahead and hold this for a couple days, because first of all, no one's going to read it, and second of all, like this is, it's kind of toned up, but they ran it. So I spent the last day with Michigan State fans screaming at me like, clearly this was just a diversionary tactic, and you know, it's just crap like that. So again, I hate you all, but no, I love you too. I love you, but I hate you. Yeah, maybe. So I'm going to stop. I'm just muting people now. And that's why I went on a stretch where it's just, you know, I'm just going to mute you. I mean, I just sent you guys some delightful language aimed my way. I
not
just
good.
Muted him. I said, I get help and you're muted. And that's it. So I'm just going to go back to that. Now, I got to read these props. This is sportsbetting.ag. I get these emails all the time, and it's all kinds of props, and props that you would kind of expect to be prop bets, right? Okay. So let me read a quote. Quote, Antoinette Padilla, that is Diego Pavi's mom, pulled on the heartstrings of many throughout the course of the season, and it feels almost certain she'll grace us with her presence at Saturday's ceremony, end quote. Okay, fine. Okay, primary color of Diego Pavia's mom top. We got black is -150, gold +200, all the way down to pink +1,000. You also have white, silver, brown, purple in there.
Okay.
Style of panties Diego Pavia's mom is wearing. I'm not kidding you. This is a prop bet. Granny panties +200, thong -300. This is a Vegas, this is a legitimate sports book. I'm not kidding you.
What?
I'm not kidding you. Will Pavia's mom show cleavage? Yes, +100. No, -140. What will happen first? Pavia and mom kiss, +300. Pavia and mom hold hands, -500. How many times will she be shown? These things are fine. The panty thing, I'm like, how could you possibly? First, like, are people betting on this? Is this real? It's a real sports, but these actually exist. You can bet on them, but is anybody going to bet on them? Some of these are whatever, like how many times will they show her? Okay, I get that. Over, sure. Under, yeah. 6.5, sure. Who will the Heisman Trophy recipient hug first? Dad, mom, brother, you know, that stuff. But, I mean, I'm reading this like, dude, you cannot be serious. Plus, is there like, are those the only two options?
Yeah.
Granny panties or thong? And how would you know? How is anybody going to know?
Yeah, how do you win money? That's just, first off, let me just say for the record, if you're betting on who the Heisman Trophy winner is going to hug first, or really anything having to do with any of their family, it may be time to call the hotline. That's just my public message. Call the hotline.
Yeah, but this is like combining two potentially troubled groups together, the gambling fiend and the weirdo.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not a good combo.
I mean, we the only thing. Ass,
okay.
Are we sure that's real? I cannot.
Yeah,
get over
no,
that.
It is. This person, Josh Barton, sends me these all the time. It has it. It has it's sportsbetting.ag/sportsbook. Good it is grief. A real site that you can actually make these bets. Again, now I will say that if, as I look at this, the over-under on Pavia's mom being shown 6.5, I think I'll take the over.
Yeah,
I think that one.
It's a long ceremony.
Yeah. Now, obviously, if he wins, you're gonna blow past over. I mean, it'd be amazing to see him win. I do think it's going to be close. But other than that, yeah, seek help. Seek help.
In
multiple
ways.
For a variety of reasons.
Yes. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will be with us coming up next. We'll see if the Titans can do the unthinkable and capture two wins in a row. We'll get into that with TD. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.